All right, so welcome to the Three Pillars of D&D cast. This is Jesse.
And I'm Tyler. I allowed room for Emma to speak awkwardly, but she's not here this time.
Exactly. But, that's okay. She's on a trip and she's having fun. So
Yep.
today we're going to talk about the Strixhaven Unearthed Arcana and the subclasses to go with that. This is a Magic the Gathering. This is the settings based on. So we thought we'd just kind of dive in and kind of explore the options. So in Strixhaven, there are five colleges, and those five subclasses are what they call cross-class subclasses. They work on multiple classes, and in each subclass, they dictate which of those classes can use that subclass. The reason why they went with that system mostly has to do with the overall theme of Strixhaven being that it's a college or a school with five colleges that have, five unique ways of teaching this information. It's from their dragon founders and all that kind of stuff. Even though you're different classes, you're going to be on the same like learning path. So you're going to learn the same abilities, but because your class abilities are going to vary, you'll still be different, than other ones. So yeah, that's how that works. When we go through each of the classes, we will discuss which ones, like you can see here with Mage with Lorehold, that they can bards, warlocks, and wizards can use as subclass. So with that in mind, we're going to start off with a pretty picture to illustrate what's going on here. This here
Speaking of,
is a Lorehold student holding a scroll with a statue in the
oh,
background, which is a major part of how their character works. Mage of Lorehold. Mages of Lorehold are particularly concerned with the forces that underlie and drive history. Drawing inspiration from the scholars and adventurers of old, they manifest the arcane powers of the past through ethereal dioramas and fantastical battle prowess. Lorehold mages are often found with a long-dead spirit summoned at their side. For who better to learn ancient history from than one who has experienced it firsthand?
that's a fun concept.
Yeah, I like the overall concept.
And the first thing of Lorehold is Lorehold spells. You learn the cantrip Sacred Flame and the first level spell Comprehend Languages. You learn additional spells when you reach certain levels in this class, as shown on the Lorehold spells table. Each of these spells counts as a class spell for you, but doesn't count as the number of spells you know. If you're a wizard, you can add these spells to your spell book upon learning them without expending any gold and prepare them as normal. And the spells you get are as third level, you get Knock and Locate Objects, fifth level, you get Speak with Dead and Spirit Guardians, seventh level, Arcane Eye and Stone Shape, ninth level, Destructive Wave, and Legend Lore.
All right.
Pretty good spells, and they fit pretty well with Lorehold. You're gonna be like exploring ruins a lot with this subclass,
Yeah, and that's a general idea, and I like that the spell list really accentuates that point. I mean, not destructive wave so much, but sometimes you get crates and stuff.
I'm an archaeologist that wants to make sure these artifacts are well preserved. I'm gonna use Destruction Wave.
All right, and then we'll get on to the main feature of this class, at least mechanically, is the Ancient Companion. You learn to call on the spirits of the ancient dead and house them temporarily in the remnants of old statues, so they may remain longer on this plane to bolster your studies and aid you in battle. Whenever you finish a short or long rest, you can call forth and bond with one such spirit, who comes to inhabit a medium freestanding statue within 10 feet of you to serve as your ancient companion. See this creature's game statistics in the Ancient Companion stat block, which chooses your proficiency bonus in several places. When you bond with your ancient companion, choose the type of spirit you bond with: healer, sage, or warrior. The choice of spirit determines certain traits in its stat block. The statue determines the spirit's appearance. The ancient companion is friendly to you and your companions and obeys your commands. In combat, the companion shares your initiative count, but it takes its turn immediately after yours. It can move and use its reaction on its own, but the only action it takes on its turn is a dodge action, unless you take a bonus action on your turn to command it to take another action. action. That action can be one in its stat block or some other action. If you're incapacitated, the companion can take any action of its choice, not just dodge. As an action, you can touch the ancient companion and expend a spell slot of first level or higher. The ancient companion regains a number of hit points equal to 10 times the level of spell slot expended. The companion perishes when it drops to 0 hit points, and when you bond with a new ancient companion at the end of a short or long rest, or when you die. When the companion perishes, the spirit within returns to its plane of origin, and the statue becomes an inert object.
That was long.
Yeah, that is long. So, as you can see, it's really similar to, like, the Ranger's companion, or, is it the Artificer has a companion that's kind of similar as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Battlesmith, Artificer.
You want to go ahead and go over the stat block?
Yeah. No, I'll do it. Ancient Companion, it's a medium construct, any alignment, has a 14 armor class and additional +2 if you choose a warrior companion. Hit points is equal to a 5 plus 5 times your level in the class. Companion has a number of hit dice, d8 equal to your level in this class. A speed of 30, strength of 14, dex of 9, constitution of 15, intelligence of 14, wisdom of 14, charisma of 11. Its saving throws are con is equal to 2 plus proficiency bonus, intelligence or saving throws plus 2 plus proficiency bonus, wisdom saving throws equal plus 2 plus proficiency bonus. Its skills is its history plus 2 plus proficiency bonus, and its perception is plus 2 plus proficiency bonus times 2. It's immune to poison damage, and it's immune to the charmed and exhausting conditions. Its senses is at a passive perception of 12 plus proficiency bonus times 2. It speaks the languages and understands the languages you speak. Its proficiency bonus equal to your proficiency bonus.
And at this point, proficiency bonus has lost all meaning. It's slowly destroying your mind.
It's so hard to say at this point, you know? Proficiency bonus. Proficiency bonus. It's just hard for my mouth to say that.
All right.
Ancient Fortitude. If she reduces the companion to 0 hit points, it can make a constitution saving throw with a DC of 5 plus the damage taken, unless the damage is from a critical hit. On success, the companion drops to 1 hit point instead.
So Evo. This is similar to the like how zombies work. They have the same kind of, what they call it, Undead Fortitude, I believe it is. So
yeah. Sage's Counsel. It's sage only, of course. While within 15 feet of the companion, you and your allies gain +2 to intelligence and wisdom check. Pretty good.
Yeah, I love this for outside combat abilities. Yeah. Like, if you're exploring an ancient ruin, it's going to give you bonus to, you know, perception and investigation checks and things like that. So, yeah, that's really good.
In your actions, you have Spirit Strike, which is a melee weapon attack. Your spell attack modifier is a hit, has a reach of 5 feet, and one target you can see, as a hit, 1d8 plus 2 plus proficiency bonus, force damage. Healer's Light, healer only, of course. The companion chooses a creature it can see within 15 feet of itself and flares with invigorating light. The creature gains 1d8 plus proficiency bonus temporary hit points. Pretty good. And then in reactions, you have Warrior's Protection, which is warrior only. Whenever a creature within 5 feet of the companion makes a strength or dexterity saving throw, the companion impulses itself between the creature and the danger. The creature can roll a d4 and add the number rolled to the saving throw.
I mean, it's not much, but it's something.
That healing one is really powerful.
Yeah, you're a big fan of the healing one. I get why you think that. It's pretty good.
Why are you a big fan of the healing one? It's just so powerful.
I'm probably not going to start using the healing spirit that much until I get to level 6, and I'll go over the reason why right now. Lessons of the past. Through your studies, you learn how to better listen and take to heart the teachings of history. When you bond with your ancient companion, you gain the following additional benefits depending on the type of spirit you chose. So, healer. Your hit point maximum increases by an amount equal to your level in this class, and you gain the same number of hit points. When you regain hit points from a spell, you regain an additional 1d8 hit points.
So powerful.
It really makes the healer good.
Again, if you have like a life cleric that heals you, that's an insane amount of hit points you're going to be healing.
Exactly. And then there's a Sage. You have advantage on ability checks using the Arcana, History, Nature, and Religion skills. Additionally, once per turn, when you deal damage to a creature with a spell of first level or higher, you can deal an additional 1d8 force damage to that creature. Pretty good, too. I mean, it has to be a first level spell or higher. It can't just be a cantrip, but that's still pretty good. And then what I really like is the Warrior. If you use your action to cast a cantrip, you can make one weapon attack as part of that action. If that weapon attack hits, the target takes an additional 1d8 radiant damage. So just overall, your companion is giving you these big buffs, even if you're not using your bonus action to command them.
That's really good. Especially that cantrip one. Because remember, warlocks can you do Warhold, and warlocks can take Pact of the Tome, which allows them to take any cantrip, like Primal Savage. So they can use their cantrip to make a melee attack, and then they can use their weapon to make a melee attack.
So I mean, you're just doing a lot of things with that. Also work with well with Booming Blade and Green Flame Blade as well.
Oh yeah,
So
would work really well with Green Flame Blade, you're right.
yeah, it's basically like just getting an extra attack, and then you still have your bonus action to have the spirit do an attack as well, which is going to be 1d8 plus 2 plus your proficiency bonus and damage as well. I mean, you're doing actually a lot of damage at sixth level with this. I think it's pretty cool. Of course, you only get the benefit that applies to the one you have.
War echoes. By pulling from the magic of the past, you can cause your opponent's old wounds to resonate anew. Once per turn, when a creature you can see hits a target with an attack roll, you use your reaction to force the target to make a wisdom saving throw against your spell save DC. On a failure, the target becomes vulnerable to one of the damage types dealt by the attack. This vulnerability lasts until the end of the target's next turn and affects the damage dealt by the triggering attack. You can use your reaction in this way a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus and gain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
There's that word again.
Classes don't use the word proficiency bonus a lot. D&D just does not use. Proficiency bonus should be a more commonly used word. I think people are frightened by the word proficiency bonus,
Oh, yeah.
but really, proficiency bonus is a nice and comforting word. Just say it, proficiency bonus.
Yes, when I use the word proficiency bonus, I think of rainbows. I don't know why. This isn't a bad ability. So basically, when somebody's taking damage, you can use your reaction to make them take double damage, and then they're vulnerable until your next turn. So that's just cool.
That's pretty good. And you can use a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus.
Yeah, so I mean, if you happen to have everybody who uses the same kind of attack, whether that's spell, fire damage, or slashing, piercing, bludgeoning damage, whatever it happens to be, you can make all that stuff double up, kind of get everyone to sync their attacks in a similar manner, and you'll use your reaction. I mean, you get to use it a number of times you get your proficiency bonus, so do at lower levels, but it gets more as you go on, so that's kind of
Of
cool.
course, by the time you get this ability, your proficiency bonus is probably already like a 4 or 5, or sorry, a 3 or 4.
I don't remember the scaling, but yeah, it's in that area, so that's pretty good. So, and it uses reaction, which is an action like most classes and subclasses don't even have a reaction ability. I'm glad that they kind of built that into it.
There's a lot of new abilities now, though, that use reaction,
Oh, there
which.
are, but I like how like this class in particular. You'll notice it has something that uses your bonus action. It has something that uses your reaction. For example, when you use the warrior with the sixth level ability, you can use a cantrip, which is your action, to get another action out of it.
Not another action, but it's another attack.
Another attack. But like overall, you're getting some really good action economy with this class. So,
Yeah, no, it's a good class, I have to say. It's pretty strong.
yeah. So for the capstone ability, we have History's Whims. Through steeping yourself in the chaotic whims of history, you learn how to briefly channel the wild nature of time itself. As a bonus action, you can enter a state of chronal chaos. When you enter this state and at the start of each of your subsequent turns while in this state, you gain one of the following benefits of your choice. Luck. You receive brief flashes of the future, sealing yourself against oncoming assault. Whenever you make a saving throw against an effect that deals damage, you can roll a d6 and add the number rolled to the total. Resistance. You rewind time, knitting together injuries as they occur. You have resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage. Swiftness. Time stutters, slowing others but hurling you forward. Your movement speed increases by 15 and you do not provoke opportunity attacks. The benefits last until the start of your next turn. You cannot choose the same benefit two rounds in a row. The state lasts for 1 minute and ends early if you're incapacitated. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of 4th level or higher to use it again.
So yeah, it's really powerful and really fun. The only problem I could see is it could really annoy your allies, because every turn you have to decide, do I want luck or resistance? Do I want luck or swiftness? Do I want resistance or swiftness? You know? Every single turn you have to choose. Because of this, you get a bunch of extra effects that really, it just make the combat a lot longer. It's not necessarily a bad thing, it might be annoying. Also, Chrono Chaos sounds like the name of a Chrono Trigger game.
Yeah, it does. I like that it makes you choose a new one each round, though. I mean, you can just go between the same two over and over again, but at the same time, you're not just always going to do the resistance to damage thing, for example.
That's one really good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one you're going to want to have on most of the time, but I like that it kind of mixes it up. It makes it more interesting. And this whole class is interesting. I mean, this whole subclass, I should say, is interesting. I like everything about it. It's, in my opinion, it's companions done right. And I'm really excited to actually try one of these at some point, as opposed to the Ranger one, where I'm not as excited. Because there's always just so much going on with the Ranger and their bonus actions and such. At least with this one, since you are a spellcaster, you can dictate how many bonus action spells you have in your repertoire and things like that. So you can really craft your character around getting the most use out of everything you do with your action economy. And I like that. Because that was my problem with the Ranger one, is that you have Hunter's Mark and you have, you know, most of the subclasses have some kind of bonus action thing you can do as well. And I feel like you get lost in not using your companion as much. And I feel like with this subclass, I'm going to be using my companion 9 out of 10 rounds, probably.
Yeah, it's pretty strong. Yeah, if you do things right, you can just get a ton of attacks in a turn.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
When I do my combats, I want them to feel epic. So, overall, you know, what do we think of Lorehold here?
It's really grown on me, I have to say. At the beginning, I did not like it. I thought it was awful. I thought it was like Beastmaster Ranger. But now, I actually like it.
Yeah, I want to try it out and see what a really good companion could be with it. Because I think it would be interesting. Plus, I think it's a real fun opportunity for the DM to kind of play a whimsical, weird, spirits on the side.
Oh, yeah, that could be fun. You know, you're constantly finding these, new spirits. So, one could be, a motherly type that's, that seems so dangerous. And, scolding you if you do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Or a senile old man.
You could have a sage that's a senile old man, or you could have a sage that's, say, a snooty professor, type. You know, that could be fun, right? And the old warrior could...
Actually...
And you could have a warrior, the weird, slightly offensive warrior guy who you're with, and you're like, you're so embarrassing. Or the guy who's actually afraid of everything, he was a warrior, but he was actually a coward or something at the same time.
Yeah. He was, so cowardice that he just, swing his sword and accidentally, wipe out entire armies.
He's I accidentally killed him.
please don't hurt me. Just, mowing through guys. Just, please don't hurt me. I don't want to die.
Exactly.
That just sounds like a fun barbarian concept.
Speaking of which, when you come up with as a DM, you could probably use some of your old characters as the basis of these sages and warriors and healers and stuff. Recycle some of those old character concepts.
Yeah, if you're doing a homebrew campaign and you did if you already did say a homebrew campaign with the same group before, you could have their, like, old characters come out as be, like, spirits.
Exactly. I mean, there's just a lot you can do with that. I think with the right DMs, you're going to have a pretty good time with this.
I mean, of course, the biggest limit is you need a statue in order to trigger the spirit. Yeah, that can be a little difficult depending on the DM, but, you know, I mean, if your DM allows it, I would just allow, like, someone would say, like, a mold earth cantrip to make a statue.
Well, I mean, that's true to a certain degree. But, I mean, come on, like, most of these worlds, if you build them with this character in mind, and as a DM, I try to keep my players' characters in mind. Most places, like, every town's going to have statues, right?
They probably don't want you taking those statues, though.
Well, that's their problem, not yours. And then, like, you know, like, a lot of the places you go are going to be, like, ancient temples and things like that. Once again, there might be people there who don't appreciate you taking the statues, but at the same time, you know, ruins and stuff are like, the bread and butter of exploration and Dungeons and Dragons, right?
Yeah, you could be like, if you play a character like this on, say, like Zendikar, you could take, like, you know, on the floating island, you could take statues.
Exactly. I mean, I know in almost every Magic the Gathering set, there's statues up here and tons of artwork. So obviously they're everywhere in those worlds. And I think honestly, if you looked at most D&D settings and pictures in the background, you see lots of statues. I mean, that's kind of one of the things of, you know, humanoids that like to make statues, apparently. Alrighty, so let's move on to our friendly friends here at Prismari. You want to do the introduction?
Actually, before that, I feel the ancient spirits compelling me to grab a strawberry soda.
Understandable. Let's take a real quick break.
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Darbrennan.
How about you, you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is...
when they take their tops off.
Sorry?
When you're reading, like... Don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table, featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's... much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface, you might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
Don't happen know where there's, like, secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks! Did you say ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're gonna have a good laugh, then we're gonna possibly cry, and then we'll grab dinner.
So here we have our Lord and Savior, Blex. He's also going to be hosting our break.
Well, there you go. Welcome to the shameless plug part of the episode. So if you want to get a hold of us on social medias, we have a Twitter account at OurDorky. We have an email account at OurDorkyFamily@gmail.com in case you want to get a hold of us about anything, questions, promotions, any kind of stuff. If you're listening to this on podcast, we have a YouTube channel. It's at OurDorkyFamily. If you're on the video, then we have a podcast form. Makes it easier to take it with you on the go. So, and you can find that pretty much at all relevant podcast places on the interwebs. Anything else to add during the break other than praise for our Lord and Savior, Blex?
Praise Blex.
Praise Blex. okay. All right.
Blex, love you.
All right, back to the show.
Mages of Prismari use surges of elemental energy to express who they are and how they see the world. Through that magic and motion, are one and the same. Both are exhibitions of raw creativity through masterpieces, through which masterpieces are made. In the pursuit of the art, some Prismari mages focus on perfecting the fine details of their technique, while others prefer to unleash their wild creative visions and dazzling spectacles of elemental power.
All right. And they're for druid, sorcerer, and wizard.
Yeah, I get the sorcerer and wizard. The druid is a little surprising to me, actually.
Yeah, that one kind of surprised me as well. So, creative skills. You gain the proficiency in two of the following skills of your choice. Acrobatics, athletics, nature, or performance. Then there is kinetic artistry. You can dash as a bonus action. When you take this bonus action, choose one of the following additional effects. Boreal sweep. Icy water swirls around you. Until the end of your turn, you can move across the surface of water as if it were harmless solid ground. Additionally, when you leave a space within 5 feet of a creature, you can force that creature to make a strength saving throw against your spell save DC. On a failed save, the creature is knocked prone. A creature can be affected by the water only once each turn. Scorching Whirl. Flames wreathe your steps. Once before the end of your turn, you can force each creature within 5 feet of you to make a dexterity saving throw against your spell save DC. On a failure, a creature takes fire damage equal to 1d4 plus your spellcaster modifier. And finally, Thunderlight Jaunt. You take on a nimble lightning form. Until the end of your turn, you can move through the space of other creatures, and you do not provoke opportunity attacks. If you end your turn inside a creature's space, you are pushed into the nearest unoccupied space. You can use a bonus action in this way a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
Well, they're okay abilities. It sucks that you have to, you only get to use them a very limited amount of times. You know, they're not, so strong. I mean, they're good, don't get me wrong, but having them be so limited and you can only use them, so limited amount of times just makes them a lot worse.
But yeah, the fact that you can only use them a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, I mean, it's fun that you get a dash action as a bonus action, which makes you a lot faster. And I like the whole running on water thing for the Boreal Sweep. That's kind of cool. I mean, you're kind of limited. These are all kind of limited case uses. And the fact that you have limited uses every day kind of works with that concept. I don't know. At the same time, it feels like, I mean, it doesn't feel the best. It's not what I want to do with a character, but I can definitely see some people enjoying that.
Favored medium. You have honed your forms of elemental expression to best suit your ideas. Choose one of the following damage types: cold, fire, or lightning. You gain resistance to that damage type. Additionally, when you cast a spell using a spell slot that deals the chosen damage type, you emit a spectacular aura of artistry, which extends 5 feet from you in every direction, but not through total cover, and lasts until the end of your next turn. While the aura is active, each creature of your choice has resistance to the chosen damage type while in the aura, as you shape the favored elemental medium around them. You can change your choice of damage type whenever you finish a long rest.
Well, I mean, there you go.
Long story short, it'll be harder to kill your party with your next fireball.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, so basically you choose a damage type, and when you cast spells that use that, you can give your allies resistance. I mean, it all works out really well. It's all very synergistic, actually. But you're mostly looking at your, blaster kind of mages, essentially, are going to get the most use out of this, or very calculating mages to a certain degree. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure who this is playing to, because it's, druid, warlock, and wizard, right?
Druid, sorcerer, and wizard.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it to a certain degree. I don't think druids... I still don't understand druid for this particular subclass, but...
I don't think anyone does. It's kind of random. Yeah,
but...
even if you look at the art of the cards that, Prismari is based off of, there's no, life druids, it's just elemental explosions.
Yeah. I don't know. Apparently they seem to think the druid's a good fit for it. Maybe we're just missing something.
Maybe.
All right, so focused expression. Honing your talents, you skillfully infuse your motions with even more potent expressions of elemental might. Once per turn, when you deal damage to at least one target, you gain an additional effect determined by the damage type chosen for your favored medium feature. This is once per turn, so keep that in mind. Cold. One of the targets of your choice takes an additional 1d6 cold damage and must make a constitution saving throw against your spell save DC. On a failed save, the target's speed is reduced by 10 feet to the end of the next turn as ice mires it. A target can be affected by the ice only once per turn. Fire. One of the targets of your choice takes an additional 1d6 fire damage. Fortifying flames then dance around one creature of your choice within 30 feet of you. The chosen creature gains 1d6 temporary hit points. And then lightning. One of the targets of your choice takes an additional 1d6 lightning damage and must make a dexterity saving throw against your spell DC. On a failed save, the target is unable to take reactions until the end of its next turn as residual lightning shocks its form.
I mean, it's free damage.
Yeah.
So, impeccable physicality, your relentless dedication and training have instilled an outstanding sense of precision and grace in your art. You have proficiency in dexterity saving throws if you don't already have it. Additionally, when you make a dexterity saving throw, you can create a d20 roll of 9 or lower as a 10.
It's actually kind of cool. I know that's like a rogue ability, I think, at later levels.
Yeah. I mean, it allows you to dodge area of effect spells, but yeah, Prismari's pretty low for me.
Yeah, not my favorite. Not my cup of tea, at least.
It's my least favorite out of the five. Now, on to my favorite one, Quandrix. For those who became mages of Quandrix, math and magic go hand in hand. Such individuals learn to break down natural phenomena into their core numerical components, and through manipulating those, alter reality on a whim. Their talents range from tangible physics, like multiplying plant growth or redistributing elements of probability acceleration, to bizarrely theoretical exercises that work the fundamentals of space itself.
Okay, so that just sounds cool, right?
Yeah, I love Quandrix. It's basically using math to manipulate reality. It's like if all those like theoretical strange math problems that are just fun to think about were in real life. And this is Sorcerer and Wizard, by the way.
Well, there you go. Starting with Quandrix spells, you learn the cantrip Guidance and the first level spell Guiding Bolt. You learn additional spells when you reach certain levels as per the list. If you're a wizard, you can add these spells to your spellbook upon learning them without expending any gold and prepare them as normal. As a sorcerer, you just learn the spells. So third level, you get Enlarge and Reduce, Spike Growth. Fifth level, you get Aura, Vitality, and Haste, which that's pretty good. Seventh level, you get Control Water and Freedom of Movement. Yet another one I really like. Ninth, you get Circle of Power and Pass Wall.
I think these really fit well with Quandrix, you know.
So, yeah. I mean, all really interesting spells that they're on there. So,
function of the probability. By iterating on the mathematical patterns of reality, you can nudge chance to tilt around a creature. When you cast a spell using a spell slot that targets at least one creature, you can choose that creature or another creature within 30 feet of it, including yourself, and have one of the following effects. Diminishing function. The chosen creature must succeed a wisdom saving throw against your spell DC, or the creature must roll a d6 and subtract the number rolled from the next attack roll and makes before the start of your next turn. Or supplemental function. Once before the start of your next turn, the chosen creature can roll a d6 and a number rolled to an attack roll or saving throw of its choice. The creature must roll a d6 after rolling the d20, but must decide before any effects of the roll occur.
There you go. I mean, that makes sure you pass that saving throw or hit that whatever you want to. I actually also really enjoyed that they went with the math terms of diminishing function and supplemental function.
Oh, are those actual math terms?
Well, supplemental and diminishing are both terms, and function is used a lot. I mean, those might not mean specific things, like with those, but those are like all math-related terms.
That's fun. Sense. Velocity shift, I like that as well. And that's the next ability.
Alright, velocity shift. You learn to manipulate kinetic formulas and alter the velocity of another creature. When a creature you can see starts its turn or moves to a space within 30 feet of you, you can use your reaction to force the creature to make a charisma saving throw against your spell save DC, which you can choose to fail. On a failure, the creature is teleported to an unoccupied space of your choice that you can see within 30 feet of you. You can use this reaction in this way a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
That's really cool.
Using your reaction to basically teleport 30 feet, or you can use it on one of your friends and they can choose to fail the saving throw. I mean, you can use it on your enemy too, of course, but
Yeah, you can use it on your enemy to, like, say, teleport. Because it can be within 3 feet, you know, any space you choose. Like, say, you know, above a giant pit.
Exactly. Which is, that's a darn good use of an ability. Pretty fun.
Yeah, and then, next we have Null Equation. Through careful calculations, you beset your enemies with abstract equations that reduce their might. Once per turn, immediately after dealing damage to a creature, you can force the creature to make a constitution saving throw against your spell save DC. On a failure, the creature has disadvantage on strength and dexterity saving throws, and its weapon and attack deal only half damage. These effects last until the start of your next turn. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and regain all extended uses when you finish a long rest.
There you go.
It can do half damage. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's mostly meant to screw up, you know, people who are attacking you, which, you know, we both agree is kind of the worst way of doing things. You should give yourself bonuses and be better, but half damage from weapon attacks from somebody could be make or break a combat.
No, it can really save someone.
Yeah, I mean, and notice how it says these effects last until the start of your next turn. So if you're fighting like a warrior, like a high level warrior who is a fighter, I should say, who's like has like four attacks a turn or whatever, that can mean a lot.
Yeah, and then Then
finally, we have quantum tunneling, which is as awesome as it sounds. Your mathematical expertise extends to altering the foundational equations of your very being. You gain resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage. That's just in general.
You're just always immune. You just always have resistance to these. It's not like you can choose that for a minute you get resistance. No, you're just natural. You just have, you know, armor isn't even this good. Like, oh, it's so good. So strong.
Then on top of that, they give you another ability, which awesome. Additionally, you can move through other creatures and objects as if they were difficult terrain. But you take 1d10 force damage for every 5 feet you move while inside another creature or object. If you end your turn inside a creature or an object, you are shunted onto the nearest unoccupied space you last occupied. So, like, yeah, you take a beating for this, right? But
yeah,
you can walk right into through that vault door for 1d10 damage.
Yeah, or it can make a really climactic scene. There's this button hidden in the rubble, and you have to, you know, you have to force yourself to get into, you know, like, move, you have to quantum tunnel inside the rubble to trigger the lever to save everyone. That can make a really climactic scene.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, there's so many cool things you can do with this. I mean, it's a level 14 or plus ability, depending on which class you have, but it's still pretty cool.
I know wizards get theirs at level 14. I don't know about sorcerer. Let me check that real quickly. Yeah, they get theirs at 17th.
Oh, so you have to wait a little bit longer as a sorcerer. As you pointed out before, we were discussing this subclass before. You're giving resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage to the two squishiest classes. Period. Sorcerer and wizard.
Yeah, they're the only classes that have 1d6 hit dice. Everything else has higher.
So it's like, well, it seems powerful. You're still probably going to die before the barbarian in the fighter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when push comes to shove. But, you know, it does make you last a heck of a lot longer at those later levels, making you feel a heck of a lot more godlike.
Yeah, and also, it's not only the resistance part that makes this thing so powerful. The functions of probability really allow you to save yourself and do more damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely has a more of a combat wizard kind of feel to it, doesn't it?
It's a combat wizard, but it's not actually encouraged to use, like, swords, which I really like.
No, exactly. Yeah, you feel like you're an active part of the party, and you can survive. You can kind of get into the fray to a certain degree. They don't have to protect you, but you're not going to be jumping in the front lines either, you know?
Yeah, unlike, like, Bladesinger, you know, you aren't being like, oh, yes, in order to get all my abilities well, I have to be, I still have to be the squishiest class, but I also have to be up in the fray. No, you can, you're not squishy anymore, and you do a lot more damage.
No, exactly. Whereas, like, honestly, I felt like the Lorehold one, for example, kind of pushed you more to be in melee kind of combat wizard a little more, especially with the warrior companion. But this one, yeah, this still feels more like a ranged wizard. You know, you don't want to be up in the fray. You just can, you know, take a hit or two, which is good. Alrighty, so moving on to Silver Quill. All right, so the Mage of Silverquill. That's going to be Bard, Warlock, or Wizard. This particular subclass, I think, has a pretty strong Bard theme to it. So Mages of Silverquill hone the power of words. They channel the magic of light and shadow through words, whether spoken aloud, written, or signed through gestures. The words of a Mage of Silverquill bring salvation to their allies and despair to their enemies. This subclass has some very confusing abilities, in my opinion. Very wordy and hard to understand, but to kind of put it in context, the basic idea is that they use the power of debate in order to make themselves more powerful, essentially. The idea is that they hurt their enemies by powering down their enemies, and then they make themselves or one of their companions more powerful on top of that by taking that negative energy from them, basically, and giving it to their friends. And that's where the whole theme of all of this is coming from. It's just hard to put those in word for D&D.
you use your words to, like, you know, use your words to discourage the enemies and encourage your companions. It's like, you know, you kind of like, yeah, like when you cast a spell, you like you can add words to it to make it more powerful or make it more frightening.
Yeah, exactly. So it feels very bardy. Like if you're a warlock or a wizard, it's gonna be like the subclass that makes your warlock or wizard feel a lot more like a bard.
Eloquent Apprentice. You learn one cantrip of your choice, either Sacred Flame or Vicious Mockery. It doesn't count against the number of cantrips you know, and is added to your class spell list if it isn't there already. Additionally, you gain proficiency in your choice of two of the following skills: Deception, Intimidation, Performance, Persuasion, or Insight.
That's why this feels like a really bardy class as well. Here you're getting two additional skills and a cantrip to start off with, and that feels like a good start to me. I kind of like that, you know?
And one of the cantrips is Vicious Mockery, which is very obviously hard.
Yeah, and Sacred Flame, you know, is just a good attack spell as well. So if you just want something that is straight up going to be more useful, that's the one you'd go with. Silvery Barbs. You can invoke words laced with magic to demoralize your foes and turn your misfortune into a boon to bolster your allies. Immediately after a creature you can see within 60 feet of you succeeds on an attack roll, an ability check, or a savings throw, you can use your reaction to demoralize the creature. Unless the creature is immune to being charmed, it rerolls the d20 and must use the lower roll, essentially gives them disadvantage. If the attack roll, ability check, or savings throw then fails, you can choose a different creature you can see within 60 feet of you. You can choose yourself. That creature is empowered and can reroll one attack roll, ability check, or savings throw it makes within 1 minute and use the higher result. A creature can be empowered by only one use of this feature at a time. Once a creature fails an attack roll, an ability check, or a savings throw because of a reroll forced by this feature, you can't use the feature again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot to use it again.
Basically, you just, like, bully your enemy, you know? You, like, you make fun of them, and then you, like, drink their tears to gain more power.
Exactly. I mean, the way they phrase the expenditure of this is basically so you get to use it until it actually works. Basically, you get to be a jerk until it works. After that, you're just a jerk for fun.
Yeah, bully.
Yeah, and you can expend a spell slot to use it again. I'm assuming you can use any spell slot.
Although I probably wouldn't use the higher spell slots unless necessary.
Yeah, it'd be pretty wasteful. I wouldn't trade anything more than a first level spell for this, and I'd still be kind of...
Honestly. Yeah, it's kind of weak for a first-level spell still.
Yeah,
you know?
I think in the right moment, like, because it's an ability check is the one where I think I'd want to use it the most for role-playing purposes.
Yeah, you could definitely use it in sneaky ways for role-playing purposes. I think that is the best use of this. In combat, just because you can only use it such a limited number of times, I would not use it much in combat.
Yeah, and if you have... like, yourself or one of your party members casts a really good spell that you don't want them to pass a saving throw on, that might be worth the spell slot to try to get them to fail that saving throw. There's going to be times when this is really powerful, but I think it's only going to be every once in a while in combat and more likely in role-playing situations.
Yeah, this is, like, with Quandrix while you're when you're going to be using this, like, all the time. You use this, like, very sparingly.
Yeah, but I think in certain campaigns you might end up using this a lot, but that's really going to be up to your DM a lot.
Inky Shroud. You learn the darkness spell. If it is added to your class spell list, if it isn't there already. If you are a wizard, you add to your spell book if it is not there already. You can cast spells without spending a spell slot. You can't do so again until you finish a long rest. If you cast a spell in this way, you can see normally through the darkness created, and when a creature you can see starts its turn in the darkness, you deal 2d10 psychic damage to that creature. You can also cast a spell normally without the additional effects by using spell slots you have of second level or higher.
So it gives you an advanced darkness spell, which I like. I like that you can see through it. It gives you a really powerful advantage for the duration of that darkness spell, which that's a concentration spell. I believe it lasts for a minute. Don't quote me on that.
You know, you can cast darkness and then just help your enemy with, like, spells because you can see through it, and then they'll also take 2d10 psychic damage. Yeah. That's pretty good.
That's a pretty powerful ability. I mean, it's not immediately obvious how good this is, but 2d10 extra psychic damage to one creature in your darkness spell. Plus, if you have the right things, you can keep pelting them without them seeing you. That can be a really good advantage.
Like, it would be a great way to, like, dispose of, like, a bunch of minions that don't see you. Because, like, every single time they start their turn, they take the damage.
Yeah, oh, because it just says when a creature you can see. It doesn't say choose a creature you can see. It's all of them. Oh.
Yep.
Oh, that's even more powerful than I thought it was. Ooh.
Yeah, I know.
That's brutal. And too bad it's not a... Cause if you were a sorcerer, couldn't you could make this bigger, I think, right? But it's not a sorcerer.
Yeah. Ability. There is a feat that allows you to get sorcerer stuff.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah, so you might be able to take some real good advantage of that. All right. So, Infusion of Eloquence. When you cast a spell that deals damage, you can invoke additional words of power to change the spell's damage type to your choice of psychic or radiant. Any creature damaged by the spell takes an extra damage equal to your proficiency bonus and has its emotions swayed with despair or adoration based on the damage type dealt. So, psychic damage, the creature is frightened of you until the start of your next turn. Radiant damage, the creature is charmed by you until the start of your next turn. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. It's nice because psychic and radiant damage are a little less resisted. That's really nice. Adding the frightened, I think, in particular, is really powerful.
They don't use frightened enough in D&D.
What's that?
They don't use frightened enough. That's true.
And since you can use it a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, at least it scales up as you get to later levels. When you get it at level 10, I think you get, like, three or four uses? That's pretty good to start with. I mean, and the extra damage equal to your proficiency bonus is not a lot, but it's something.
Yeah. Word of power. You can invoke a word of power that is the pinnacle of your magical study. You gain the following options. Deadly Despair. When the target of your silvery bar fails an attack roll, ability check, or a saving throw because of the reroll, you can invoke a word of despair to give the target vulnerability of one damage type of your choice until the start of the next turn. Or Selfless Invocation. When a creature you can see within 60 feet of you takes damage, you can invoke a word of power using your reaction to grant the creature resistance to that damage, and you take a amount of psychic damage equal to the damage that creature takes.
So, the Selfless Invocation, basically, you take half the damage, the other person takes half the damage.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know if I'd want to take that damage that often. But in a pinch.
But Deadly Despair. Deadly Despair is pretty
good. Yeah, I like Deadly Despair. I wouldn't use Selfless Invocation as much, but every once in a while, you know, it's going to be worth it. It's not going to happen very often.
Yeah.
It's going to be worth it every once in a while.
Yeah.
All right. The Mage of Witherbloom is a druid and warlock subclass. Mages of Witherbloom draw their magic from the energy that endlessly flows from life to death and back again. They see the duality of thriving life and the inevitable death in all things, tapping and manipulating the transition of energy between these states. Some Witherbloom adherents focus on vital energies to nurture life and empower others, while others embrace the drain of vitality into decay to sap and strike down their foes.
Yeah, it's life and death. Witherbloom spells. You learn the cantrip, Spare the Dying, and the first level spells cure wounds, and inflict wounds. There are additional spells when you reach certain levels in this class, as shown on the Witherbloom spells table. Each of these spells counts as a class spell for you, but doesn't count against the number of spells you know. If you are a druid, you always have the spells prepared, and they don't count against the number of spells you prepare each day. So at third level, you get Lesser Restoration and Rave Enfeeblement. At fifth, you get Revivify and Vampiric Touch. At seventh, you get Blight and Greater Restoration. At ninth, you get Anti-Life Shell and Mass Cure Wounds.
So that's a really nice suite of spells, actually, to have up and going.
Yeah, a bunch of healing spells and a bunch of damaging and necrotic spells.
It's a nice suite of spells for a warlock as well. So I don't think they normally have Revivify, yeah. Do they? Or Lesser, Greater Restoration?
I don't think they do.
Yeah.
No, this is pretty great for a warlock. And also, it's okay for druids, but they get a lot of these.
Yeah, I mean, it's just good to always have those prepared. Especially Revivify, Greater Restoration, Lesser Restoration. I mean, kind of some nice ones. Also, at level 1 is Essence Tap. As a bonus action, you can draw on a reservoir of life essence to empower yourself for 1 minute, or until you use this feature again. For the duration, you gain one of the following benefits of your choice. Overgrowth, when you choose this benefit, and as a bonus action on subsequent turns while the benefit lasts, you can expend and roll one hit die. You regain a number of hit points equal to the number rolled, plus your spellcasting ability modifier. Alright, that's kind of cool. Yeah. Bonus action to regain a hit die. Withering Strike. When you deal damage, you can change the damage type to necrotic, and you ignore resistance to necrotic damage. So, non-resisted, basically, necrotic damage, that's good. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. I like that. I mean, especially for when you get the subclass initial ability, that's pretty good. So she said you can use it for, 1 minute. I mean, 10 rounds of necrotic damage or 10 rounds of gaining hit die.
Yeah, it's usually since you ignore resistance to necrotic damage is really great against creatures that say have a bunch of resistances or immunities.
Yeah, exactly. The ones that are going to have resistance to necrotic damage probably have resistance to other damage types you're using as well.
So, Witherbloom Brew. You gain proficiency with herbalism kits if you don't already have it. When you finish a long rest, you can use an herbalism kit and a pot of or cauldron to create magical brews. You create a number of brews equal to your proficiency bonus. Each brew requires its own flask. A brew retains its magical potency for 24 hours or until it is used. For each brew, choose one of the following effects. Fortifying. When you create this brew, choose a damage type from the following list. Cool fire, necrotic, poison, and radiant. A creature can drink this brew or administer it to another creature as an action. The recipient gains resistance to the chosen damage type for 1 hour. Quickening. A creature can drink this brew or administer it to another creature as an action. The recipient regains 26 hit points and one disease or condition from the following list affecting the recipient's end. Brew's user choice, charmed, frightened, paralyzed, poisoned, or stunned.
Well, that's a nice little boost. I mean, especially if it's something you just get to do.
Yeah. And also, toxifying. As an action, a creature can apply this brew to a simple or martial weapon. The next time this weapon and a piece of ammunition is fired by it and hits a creature within 1 hour, the creature takes 2d6 poison damage and must succeed a constitution saving throw and your spell save DC or be poisoned for 1 minute.
Wow. Okay, so that's actually pretty good. I mean, you get to do that. You can produce a number of brews equal to your proficiency bonus once per long rest.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun. Maybe a few little potions to do some stuff with. I like that. It's kind of like the alchemist,
yeah.
Artificer alchemist. Some of their abilities?
Yeah, it kind of is.
I'm still with you on that whole, I think they kind of missed out on not including the artificer at all in this. But nor the cleric, so.
I feel like the cleric might be good in, say, like, Silver Quill. I think that's where they should have put the cleric. Or Lorehold.
But I think the whole idea is that I don't think Strixhaven's a world with gods. So I don't know if clerics exist at all.
But clerics, they don't necessarily need a god.
Well, no,
you know,
I agree.
You could just flavor them differently, Strixhaven.
Yeah, there seems to be an obvious snubbing of clerics and artificers when it comes to this particular world. So I hope that they can figure out how to add something there. Maybe that's just, maybe that's, they don't think the clerics should be a big part of this world. And you could live without it. I mean, there's plenty of healing abilities from Witherbloom here. For example, you don't really need clerics. So, I mean, what's a cleric but a warlock who doesn't have a binding contract? All right, so Witherbloom edit. Your connection to the flow of life force deepens. Once per turn, when you deal necrotic damage or restore hit points using a spell, one target of the spell takes an additional damage or gains additional hit points equal to your proficiency bonus. So once per turn, you deal extra necrotic damage or heal more, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah, it's just extra damage, extra healing, depending on what you're doing. It's that simple.
Yeah, it's a simple little thing. I mean, it's once per turn, so it will add up over time. And then their last ability is the Withering Vortex. When you cast a spell using a spell slot, that deals necrotic damage to any number of creatures that aren't undead or constructs, choose one of the creatures that took damage. Whew, that's a lot of conditions. You drain an amount of life energy equal to half the damage dealt to the chosen creature. One creature other than yourself that you can see within 30 feet of you regains a number of hit points equal to the life energy drained. Okay, so you heal somebody else and you drain... They get half the energy, half the damage you did. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. So basically, you just suck the life out of something and give it to one of your companions, probably the tank.
I feel like this is one of the weakest end cap abilities. Yeah.
It has a lot of restrictions that, you know, aren't always going to come up, but when they do, you're going to really wish that they didn't exist. I mean, I get why they're doing it. They're going for a particular flavor, obviously. But it just feels like, I mean, at this point, you might be doing a lot of damage, so it might add up to a lot, depending on what type of, where you are in the campaign. I mean, this is a high-level ability. You're probably doing a lot of necrotic damage. At the same time, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel particularly fun or flavorful. I don't know. That would be the end of those guys. Either way, how do you feel? Like, Quandrix is your favorite one, obviously. What do you think is your second favorite?
Yeah, my second favorite, I'd have to Lorehold. They did a great job with Lorehold.
Yeah, I really like Lorehold. I think they're going to be my favorite. Yeah, I think they're my favorite.
Not Quandrix.
And Quandrix is probably second. Third, I'd probably put Silverquill, but I'd probably more likely to end up playing a Witherbloom at some point, just because you might need a party healer, you know, and that's what they're going to be. I think they're probably going to get a little more use if you're playing a pretty strict campaign that takes place in Strixhaven. You know, there's a lot there. I really like the idea of Strixhaven. I think there's a lot of potential for this setting, and I think it's going to be really good for people who feel icky about Harry Potter these days, but still want to play kind of a magical school setting in Dungeons and Dragons.
I have the same opinion. I mean, magical schools are and probably will forever be a popular, you know, topic and setting, but because of Harry Potter, it's kind of tainted that, you know, having a completely separate from Harry Potter setting and would be really great. By the way, did we mention that Strixhaven has stadiums where all the colleges battle out?
Yeah, in a big competition that is not at all like a certain game that's found in other magical school things at all.
Yeah.
But it's a setting that I think that people should definitely take a good look at when it comes out this fall. I'm really looking forward to it. I think that they need to make some changes to this UA. I want to really remember to do the survey this time.
I'm really sad that the Magic the Gathering books typically underperform. Yeah, I wish more people play this, but sadly, there's probably not going to be too many.
No, but I think as the catalog of Magic the Gathering books builds up, I really think that we need to come up, either ourselves, somebody else, or whatever, needs to come up with some good way to do a great planeswalking campaign where you could jump around to these different worlds and experience different things. I think that's a really has some real good potential, and with all these books we're getting for all these worlds, we can really flesh that out. So I could see that being a thing.
No, that'd be a really fun campaign to play in anyways.
Oh yeah, no, I'm hoping one day I might have enough courage to actually make that campaign happen one day, but
you could do it. You can do it.
Either way, let's wrap that up. I love this particular picture. It's from the card called Secret Rendezvous. It obviously hints at a Silver Quill and Lorehold student either meeting up to discuss secret information, or they're having some kind of lovers meeting, because this feels like a really lovely scene. And that's kind of what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some hidden intent.
Yeah, so I think there's some layers to this maybe, but I like it. And I like seeing this normalized in media. So it's just kind of nice. Thanks for watching.
Yep.
Music.
No, we're gonna play the music like after this scene, so you just look lame. We're just gonna cue the music. You dancing around.
I should be messing with my hair while I'm talking about this. You can see it now?
Yep.
Okay.
So along with your ugly face. I'm joking. Your face is beautiful. You know. It's a shoe fit to wear it.
Pretty much.
Hail Blex.
Blex is the best. Oh, Cody's awesome too.
My look is bad.